Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. A nice Tuesday afternoon, September 24th. Tim, how are you doing in North Carolina?
I'm doing well. Doing really good. How are you?
Can't complain. You know, house is getting built. Baby's good. Chickens are laying eggs. Hockey season's around the corner. I'm 3-0 in my fantasy football league. Can't complain. I tell you what. And the Buffalo Bills just absolutely waxed the Jacksonville Jaguars last night. It wasn't even close. It was like a practice squad getting beat by the varsity squad. It was five straight touchdowns in the first half. Josh Allen looked unbeatable. He's the MVP right now of the NFL. So it's okay. You know what I mean? It could be a lot worse.
I saw that Mac Jones fumble. Not great. Not great.
No, yeah. The Bills, they're on a different level than other teams in the NFL. So, Patriots struggling. They have no direction whatsoever. The Bills have it figured out. They let Stephon Diggs go. Everybody was worried. I'm not worried. They're doing great. They're doing just fine. James Cook stepping in. They got Shakir, the wide receiver. They're doing okay, Tim. They're doing okay. And so are we. You know what I mean? So are we. And I hope everybody else there is doing okay, too, because it can get trying at times. Do you want to get into this, Tim?
Yeah, let's talk about our feelings.
Yeah, no thanks. You're like my wife. What's going on inside there, big guy? I'm like, don't talk to me. Let's move on. But before we move on to anything else, this episode is brought to you by Bet365. You should open an account today. Bet on a huge range of markets, so whatever the sport, hockey, whatever the moment, preseason. Now. It's never ordinary at Bet365. So open an account today. Use code HockeyCA at Bet365. Somewhat proud partner of Dropping the Gloves. So, Tim, we had Kirby Doc on last week.
Yep.
Took a little bit of heat. My critique, was it a critique of Barkov when he said the best player, the hardest player to play against, the person he kind of wants to be, was Alexander Barkov? And I was giving him a hard time. And much like Montreal Canadian fans do, they come at you hard. They're very passionate fan base. And they didn't like me giving Kirby Doc a little bit of a hard time about picking Alexander Barkov. I just want to submit my mea culpa. I'm very sorry. I do know Barkov is a world-class player, but in my eyes, when I look around the league and I see all these players skating on the ice, Barkov would not be in my top three, probably my top 10. Maybe I don't see him as much, but for me, there are better players out there. It doesn't mean Barkov's any worse. It just means I think there are better players out there.
Well, I think part of it, if you're Kirby Doc, wouldn't Barkov be the perfect guy where he's got like an elite two-way game, the tall center, the long stick? Like, I think that's if you said McDavid, Kirby Doc's not going to be McDavid, but he might be a Barkov light, right?
Yeah.
So, and this is also an example of like when we interview players from big fan bases like Montreal, we get a lot of like people that are listening to the show for the first time or whatever, and they just drop in because they like the player. And they don't understand your sense of humor or like how the show goes. And they see you ripping on Barkov as like, oh my God, he doesn't know how good Barkov is. What a moron.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and our listeners who listen to every show, every interview, were not offended by that, even the Habs fans. But it was just a lot of people dropping in cold and seeing the critique and not getting it, basically.
Hurts my feelings. It does. But, you know, it's just two dudes having, I like Kirby Doc. He's been on the show 3 or 4 times. So it is what it is. But, you can't please everybody, Tim. I think that's what you have to learn in this business. But moving on, what'd you think of Kirby? You like the third interview we had with him?
Yeah, it was okay. It wasn't our best interview. I think, clearly camp started like the next day, literally. Yeah. So it was clearly a lot on his mind. He was busy. He had just skated that morning. I think he just kind of was kind enough to give us, you know, a half hour of his time, but wasn't super engaging, and that's okay. But still cool kid, and I'm really excited for him to, fingers crossed, stay healthy and see what he can do over the course of a full year.
Yeah, interesting makeup with the Montreal Canadiens team, isn't it? When you actually look at the roster and look at who they have coming up in the ranks, it's amazing that when you're constructing a team, if you're Kent Hughes, I know this doesn't fall on him totally, but it's top heavy. Like, it really is. I know, you know, Caden Gould is good. Lane Hutson, very exciting young player. Arbor Jacki, the moose on the back end. I get that. But they invest heavily in their forwards. Like, their top two lines, Caulfield, Suzuki, Slutovsky, Doc, Laine. It's a lot of money for those five guys. And the production really hasn't been there I want to say win production, because they do put points on the board. It just, it does show that you need to balance out your lineup in order to be successful. You can't just throw high end forwards and hope everything goes well. I think the Edmonton Oilers learned that lesson where, yeah, we got the two top guys in the league, and for the better part of a decade, they were killing it. It wasn't until Evan Bouchard showed up, Matias Ekholm started playing really, really good. You got Broberg last year. You had some contributions from the back end that things started to maybe click, and you got some depth with the third and fourth line with Henrique and Connor Brown and Derek Ryan and all these other guys. So I think you do need a little bit of depth and some help on the back end. But yeah, Canadians will figure it out. I think they're in a good spot moving forward. They're not going to be successful this year, but it was nice to see Kirby back in good spirits. 100%. Gosh, he's going to be fun with Patrick Laine. And the lines were released the day after we had that interview. And it is him and Laine. And I think it's Newhook playing on the left side. But hey, give it some time. I want to see Slakovsky move down to play with those three. Just three mooses. It'll be incredible. But moving on. Because we did the doc interview, Tim, because we've been doing the division previews, we still have one more to go. We'll get to it Thursday. The Pacific Division, my alma mater. Much like Michigan Tech, I spent a lot of time in the Pacific Division. We'll do that on Thursday, but we've missed a lot of stuff. People are clamoring. They want to know, what does Tim think of Don Sweeney and the interaction between him and Jeremy Swayman and Suck It Up Chicklets and all that situation in Boston? What does John think about Radko Gudas and the Anaheim Ducks being named captain? What are the Sabres ever going to name a captain? So we're going to do a little spring cleaning. Even though it's the start of summer, Tim's calling it the chaos episode. Isn't that right, Tim?
That's right. Yeah. And part of it is because there's so much news, like you said, we haven't covered, and there's no particular order to this. I wanted to just like rifle through these notes as I collected them over the past couple of weeks, and we'll just cover these things as they come up. So let's start with the Sweeney one you mentioned. So he spoke last week at the presser to kick off their preseason and rookie camp and all that. And he was asked about the report from Ty Anderson, Earl, friend of the show, about the report that he was not returning Swayman's calls, basically. And he lit into it was kind of directed at Ty for asking the question, but it wasn't at Ty. It was at Biz and some of the other guys. But basically he said that was completely incorrect. And this is a report that came out from Biz on Chicklets and basically saying he's a great entertainer, but you can't just present this stuff as fact when it's not. And so he said, it's not true. The report, and this came from Friedman a day or two later, said they're at 8 years, both sides. It's just the number, which is not surprising. But he sounds like Swayman is not willing to budge, which I don't give him a hard time for it. I don't blame him for that. But they're preparing to start their season without Swayman at this point. He's not there for camp. I'm sure he's working out, but he's not part of the team right now. And he doesn't owe them that. He doesn't have a contract. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he's not like withholding services, as someone put it on Twitter a few weeks ago. It's like he does not have a contract. He doesn't owe anyone anything. So it's very disappointing as a Bruins fan because you want him in the net, but the man needs his money. He deserves it. So I think this is more on the Bruins.
Yeah. And like we mentioned before in past episodes, his agent has told his players and gotten his players to hold out throughout camp and into the season. So this is not something new for that agent and his player. The big thing that I took from his comments, obviously, aside from, you know, going at Spit and Chicklets and calling them and saying, hey, you are a part of the media now. What you say does matter. You can't just go and throw these unfounded accusations everywhere. That's not true. You guys do have a following. So that's something you got to be responsible with. And even someone on our own network, Frank Saravalli, has been called out for that a little bit, where he says something, he has to, you know, defend it a little bit. And I think I might have done it once or twice
a week,
but everybody knows I'm BSing. But when you throw a tweet out there and then state a fact about a current event like Jeremy Swayman, and you back it up and say very well-known, you know, source, that's a different level. And when you have millions of followers like they do. But anyways, when Don Sweeney said, we're trying to get something done by December 1st, that was the one comment everybody grabbed a hold of, and rightfully so, because if you're already thinking to the date, the last possible date you can sign this guy to have him on your roster for the whole season, red flag, this is not going well. Because any other GM would be like, yeah, we're close. We've been going back and forth. We've been having good dialogue. I expect something soon. You know, me and the player and the agent, we're talking daily. Don Sweeney said, "We're hoping to get something done by December 1st, Tim." As a Bruins fan, what does that say to you? Because that's not October. That's not the start of the season. This is like he's going to sit out the whole season potentially.
That is very scary. That date did freak me out. And this makes me question, like, what does it mean when they say we're touching base daily? Because this is pretty black and white. To say Swayman's number is 9.5 and the Bruins want to do 8 and neither side is willing to budge to this point, what does daily touch base look like? Does Sweeney just text the agent, call him, hey, you still at 9.5? Yep. Okay. I'll call you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, is that what it is? What does that look like?
It's just a chicken. It's a game of chicken. They're driving at each other and they're trying to see if someone blinks. The Bruins are leaning on Swayman saying, we're fine to go without you, but we would really like you in camp. So we have our number and that's where we are at. Just say it's 8 years, $8 million. And Jeremy Swayman saying, okay. So it's whoever blinks first, basically. And it sounds like, listen, based off just the eye test, Jeremy Swayman's interview he gave a month ago to that radio host, he's committed.
Yeah.
He is not wavering. And the fact that he is so steadfast in this and he understands the ramifications of this whole contract process and setting a standard for the next goaltender who's going to come through this, he gets the gravity of the situation. And he sees that he is setting the bar for the goaltenders. I'm going to continue to push us forward so we get the money we're due and we're deserved. And he's not going to budge. And it happens in every negotiation, in every single sport. The owners want to get a good deal. The players want to get as much money as they can. And usually the players will buckle because they don't have any leverage. They need the money that the owners have. But in this case, you have a 25-year-old goalie who is in the prime of his career. And he knows it. And he's willing to sit out because last year he made 3.5. So it's not like he's poor. He'll be fine this year. He's a very valuable asset and he knows it. So, and he kind of has the Bruins by the cojones. Because when you look at the depth chart for the Boston Bruins on the back end, you get Korpisalo from Ottawa and people, there's all kinds of opinion on Jonas Korpisalo. Oh, he can revert back. You know, Ottawa had a bad defensive team. He was good at one point. Maybe. Or maybe he's the same guy he's been for the last 3 years who's just as terrible. Then they have some 30-year-old journeyman backup, Kazimir Kusakuyo. No one knows who the heck he is. So they don't have anybody, Tim, to throw out there. So Swayman has some leverage there. So it's interesting. I don't know where this will end up. In my eyes, I feel like Swayman has the upper hand just based on what he did last year and the year before and them training Ullmark, setting the stage for him to take the net for the next 8 years. But at the same time, the Bruins have an owner in Jeremy Jacobs who's a stubborn mule. Like he wins negotiations. Whenever we negotiated with Gary Bettman for a CBA, every 5 years it was, I was involved in two of them. It was Jeremy Jacobs in the NHL. Like Gary had his few owners that were in his pocket. It was Jeremy Jacobs. It was Craig Leopold and a few other guys. But the top guy was Jeremy Jacobs. And so you think he's going to lose a negotiation with Jeremy Swayman? Yeah, this is a rock. What's that old saying? A rock in a hard place or something? You're stuck between a rock and a hard place. I don't know what it is, but
yeah.
I don't know who's going to win this, but as a Bruins fan and as a Bruins team, you need this guy on the ice. You need him to win games. We saw what he did in the playoffs last year versus Florida. It should have been a 10-0 every single game, and Swayman kept them in it. So if you think that's going to change this year just because you bring in Zadorov and Elias Lindholm, I don't know. Swayman has to be good, very good for them to compete. And he's not in net right now. He's not even in camp. So it's a huge deal that he's not there. How do you see this ending up?
I keep wanting to be an optimist and say they're going to sign for somewhere 8 years by 9. It gets done before the season starts. That's looking less and less likely, but until the season comes, I'm going to assume he gets the deal done before that. The only part, like you said, that really freaks me out is that whole December 1st comment, but I'm going to assume this gets done. It's too important to not get done.
Yeah. Well, they have 8.6 right now in cap space. So if he wants 9, north of 9, they still will have to do some maneuvering to get cap compliant, but that shouldn't be that big of an issue. You just send down somebody or waive somebody. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I think Jeremy wants to set the market. I think he wants to be 10 million plus, which would be a disaster for the Boston Bruins. An absolute disaster moving forward. If that's the case, we'll see. Only time will tell for the Boston Bruins. They made this bed by trading Linus Ullmark, and now here we are. fast forward 3 months and they still don't have Swayman signed and they're already midway through camp and they got Jonas Corposalo. Well, all right, moving on, Sam, what are we talking about next in this chaos episode? It's already so chaotic. Yeah. I can't handle it.
Some of these will be pretty quick hits. There was a report that Jason Robertson from the Stars had surgery on his foot on July 31st. He's been non-weight bearing the last 6 weeks. So he's coming off of that right now. He won't skate to start training camp with the main team. He'll miss the majority of camp. So I would expect him to be ready for the season based on these comments from Jim Nill. But, you know, he might have a little bit of a slow start just because he hasn't been able to skate, hasn't been able to train. It does affect you. It won't have a huge impact on the Stars. They'll win the games. But in fantasy hockey, if he starts off slow and you're looking to buy low on him, he'd be a great guy to trade for in November or something when he only puts up, you know, less than a point per game when you know he's good for more than that.
He had his surgery the same day my baby was born, July 31st. I wonder if he knew that and waited to have it on that day. And if he was in Traverse City with Dr. Schwenard, who was the foot guy here in town, maybe he was in the same hospital.
Maybe.
You never ask about my baby. Why not?
How's the baby doing? What's the name again?
Ava. I don't want to talk Ava's about the oldest. Ava's my oldest. Yeah, it's Marie. Ava.
Marie.
What's it? Ava?
What's up, guys? Tim here. Listen, if you've been listening to the show for a while, then you know that I have an adopted rescue dog named Levi. He was around 6 when I got him. He's 8 now, and he's the sweetest and most loving companion you could ever hope to know. Dog owners know what I'm talking about. You want the best for your pets to help them live as happily and healthily as possible. That's why we partnered with The Farmer's Dog. The Farmer's Dog makes feeding real healthy dog food easy and convenient, and your dog will absolutely love it. Levi is obsessed, and he's been licking his bowl clean every day. The Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food right to your door. It's developed by vets, nutritionally balanced, and made from real meat and veggies to the same safety standards of human food. A healthy diet isn't just important for people. It has all kinds of benefits for dogs, too. From healthier coat and skin, to better breath, even easier digestion. Levi's energy has been so much better since making the switch, and he looks forward to mealtime in a way that he never has before. The package came in and everything was personalized with Levi's name. I mean it when I say these guys love pets the same way that you do. And now you can join the movement and get 50% off your first box of fresh, healthy food at thefarmersdog.com/gloves. Plus, you get free shipping. Just go to thefarmersdog.com/gloves to get 50% off. That's thefarmersdog.com/gloves.
Now, all right, moving on. A surprise news coming out of Anaheim. We talked about the teams with no captains. I think it was about a month and a half ago. We went down the list. Who was going to have a captain named for this season? And the team that named a captain, the Anaheim Ducks, I think we all agreed that this guy was not even on our radar to be captain of this team. Radko Gudas was named captain of the Anaheim Ducks last week in a decision that was shocking across the board. Here's a 34-year-old journeyman defenseman. Only 2 years left on his contract, doesn't put up any points whatsoever in the NHL. You know, because he plays 82 games consistently, he gets assists, he gets the odd goal here and there. His career high for goals is 6, which was in 2016 and 17 with the Philadelphia Flyers. His career high for assists is 19 last year when he played, in 2013, 14, 19 with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So he doesn't put up many points. He's been with the Anaheim Ducks for 1 year, Tim. And all of a sudden, Pat Verbeek decides, that's my captain. This is a guy who has been on the wrong side of the law many, many times. Arguably one of, if not the most hated players in the NHL. We had him on our show, friend of the show. He embraces that mentality. But he's been in the league now for over 10 years. He's a vet. He knows how to play the game. And it's a Pat Verbeek style of hockey. But looking at this roster, when we were going down, who will be the captain? Are they going to go young? Give it to Leo Carlson, only his second year in the league, but, you know, number 2 overall draft pick. Are they going to go Troy Terry, the feel-good story who came out a few years ago and just couldn't stop scoring goals? Are they going to give it to the veteran Cam Fowler, who's been there, it seems like, forever? No. Radko Gudas, Tim. What did you think when they put the C on his shoulder?
Yeah, this was a surprising one because we did a segment over the summer of like which of these 7 teams without captains will name one, who will they name, who's going to go this season without one. I think we both said the Ducks wouldn't do it. Yeah. There was no clear candidate in our eyes and clearly we were wrong. So I think it's really cool. I mean, he's a I think he surprised both of us with how well spoken he was and how cerebral he was. And he's kind of embraced that. He's not quite a goon because he's really good at what he does, playing physical, shutting down, matching against top lines, and always playing, you know, secondary role to a Victor Hedman and Ryan McDonough type, or with Ekblad and whoever else, like, you know, just playing that shutdown role and not being asked to put up points. But I think this shows that he's really respected. And I think probably because he went to Anaheim and saw an opportunity to take a leadership role, be more vocal, help coach the kids. And I think that's being respected here and reflected in that change. And I think also it's similar to the Chicago situation with Foligno, where this is, like you said, 2 years left. He's probably going to wear the C for those 2 years. And then it goes to McTavish or
Leo Carlson or Cutter Gauthier or something.
One of those guys, right? It's a kind of a bridge captaincy for those kids to come up and learn under him. And I think it's great. I think it's cool for him. And I mean, for a guy like to be 34, to never be a star, to get the captaincy for the first point is really neat. So I'm happy for him. And yeah, I think this is a great, great move by the Ducks.
Yeah, I'm still on the fence. I don't know how it's going to play out for the young guys, because it definitely sends a message to this team. And I think this is what Pat Verbeek was doing by naming him captain. This is how we want to play, because your captain reflects your style of play. And you look at the Winnipeg Jets, Adam Lowry, same type of thing. This is how we want our team to play. So Radko Gudas, he sets the tone. He's going to be aggressive. He's not going to, you know, back down from everybody, from anybody, excuse me. And that's what Pat Verbeek likes. So I don't know. Is it a slight to these young players? Does a guy like Troy Terry?
I think a Cam Fowler. He's been there for like 15 years.
Yeah. So does that happen where these players who have invested the time, were high draft picks, have been there forever, all of a sudden Radko Gudas comes in for 1 year? 1 year Timmy was there. And he's named captain the very next year. So to me, that would create some animosity, maybe some friction in the room, which maybe Radko Gudas will have to address. But hey, the GM gets to choose a captain. And I personally don't think it's a good move. But I don't mind it because I like Radko Gudas. But just from a team perspective and building a team, I don't know. I don't know if this works, but he is like, I would go through a wall for this guy. When you see what he does with his energy and his size and the kind of situations he puts himself in, you want to do that too. So it is very kind of, you gravitate towards guys like that.
Well, that's kind of what I was meaning too, by like, he probably changed a lot last year going into a new team, young team, up and coming franchise. I bet he made a lot of changes in how he approached the game, how he conducted himself in the locker room, the leadership, being vocal. I think he saw that opportunity and ran with it. So I think the Radko Gudas of in Anaheim over the past year and a half was different from the Radko Gudases of the past. Probably pretty intentional. I don't think he ever had the intention of being the captain next year, but just taking on the leadership role, and he got earned the respect of the management because of it. So I think it's probably a different Gudas than we've seen before.
I agree. But still, 34, that type of defenseman, strange. You don't see it every day. Usually it's a skill guy, a number one overall draft pick, who gets to see. I like it. All right, moving on. Kevin Adams, GM of the Buffalo Sabres. Another, you know, franchise, doesn't really have a direction, has some good young pieces, much like the Anaheim Ducks. He says they will name a captain this season. They lost Kyle Okposo last year. They traded him at the deadline. He went to Florida, wins a Stanley Cup. They have a vacancy. Bucking the trend of teams not going with a captain, he says he will. He will name it before the season starts. So there are obvious contenders to him. Friend of the show? No, never mind. Ghost of the show? Rasmus Dahlin. We got Tage Thompson. We got friend of the show, Dylan Cousins, the Alaskan assassin. Where's he from? The Yukon Jackknife? The
workhorse from Whitehorse.
Workhorse from Whitehorse, Dylan Cousins. There are some players who potentially deserve to have that C on their chest. Right now, if you're Kevin Adams, Tim, you have a gun to your head, who's the captain?
Yeah, it's Dahlin. I think he's the best player on this team. He's the leader. He's been there for a few years now. He's played under the pressure. I think he's the obvious pick here. I know he's not the tallest, but he's pretty tall.
He is tall. I'm wavering on my Tage Thompson support based on last year. I didn't like how he handled himself. I think in this room, I think Dylan Cousins is the guy. I truly, honestly believe that. He gives a little bit of, you know, offensive output. He's not completely inept like some guys are. He puts points on the board. He plays a responsible 200-foot game, but he has that it factor. You know what I mean? Where guys want to rally around him. If you need a big hit, Dylan Cousins will make that big hit. If you need a fight, he'll fight. If you need a big goal in the World Championships after the season, he was lights out. He played terrific in the World Championships where he was putting up goals. He was arguably Canada's best player. I know Rasmus Dahlin is a Norris caliber defenseman. I know Tage Thompson is an all-star center who's 6'6". He's a moose of a man. In the room, you want someone that guys look at and go, okay, yeah, we got to go. And I think that guy is Dylan Cousins. So I think Kevin Adams respects that and will acknowledge that. Gosh, I think Dylan Cousins is the guy. I've changed, obviously. I thought it was going to be Tage Thompson, but, you know, life happens. And I think it's going to be the UConn workhorse, Dylan Cousins, who will be named the next captain. Those two guys will be A's, Tage Thompson and Rasmus Dahlin, and maybe they'll give, you know, two A's to Owen Power and Alex Tuck for the away A's or whatever, but it's Dylan Cousins. You can lock it in. That's the answer here.
We'll find out.
Another friend of the show gets a captain. What? We just breed leaders on this show. We don't get guys on this show who are followers. Leaders. Did you know that the Bruins are naming Zadorov captain?
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are. He came in. He said, this is my team. Call me Big Z. I'll be number 33, and I'm the captain now. Time to move on. Turn the page. All right. Speaking of Kyle Okposo, he retired, Tim. Did you know that?
I did because I made this agenda, so I knew that.
Yeah, don't tell people that. So what did he have to say in his retirement announcement, Tim?
Well, he was just super gracious about it. This is one of the better stories because he was the guy that, you know, got the cup handed off early. He had a career long, over 1,000 games, Olympic snub, in my opinion. I think I want to say it was 2014 when he led American players in goals at the point where the team was selected and didn't make the team. Someone fact checked me on that, but it was just a guy that was probably underrated. And I saw some highlights of him, and he was really good in his prime.
Oh yeah,
he was a 30 goal scorer. You know, he moved really well, and he could hit really hard. Anyway, announced his retirement, and he did it going out on top, finally winning the cup with Florida. So, good feel good story from, by all reports, a great guy and a great player. So, really cool for him, and we could all only hope the best for that for ourselves as well.
Oh wow, deep, Tim. We can always hope for the best of ourselves to be like Kyle Okposo. But yeah, great player. You touched on when he was in his prime with the New York Islanders. He was unstoppable. They had a few guys who were just really, really hard to play against, and he was the lead guy. He reminded me of a Zach Parise. Very similar type players, just like a dog on a bone when they're chasing the puck. And he was very, very, not as offensively gifted as Zach Parise, but still consistent. He's going to get you 20 to 25 goals, and he's just relentless. Absolutely relentless. He cashed in with the Buffalo Sabres, signing a 8-year, $6 million deal. So he got his money, but good for him. Going out on top. That's nice to see. Not a lot of guys get to do that, but good for Kyle Okposo. All right. What else are we talking about, Tim?
Yeah, this next one's a little bit tricky, and I thought about not even including it for the reasons we'll get into, but I think it's worth talking about just because it's big news and it's a big team and a big name. The Vegas Golden Knights announced that Robin Lehner failed to attend training camp for a mandatory preseason medical exam required to confirm his ineligibility to play. Multiple sources told Daily Faceoff and everyone else who reported this. So he's we know he's not going to play, but he still has to complete this exam to confirm that for the legal issues, for the, you know, the CBA and all that. The GM, Kelly McCrimmon, said, quote, will not be reporting to the club this year. He continues to be unfit to play. There are unique circumstances surrounding the situation that the NHL, the NHLPA, and Vegas are working through. Collectively, we are assessing our next steps, and then we have more to say, we will. That all came from the team and from the reporters who covered it. It seemed like Robin Lehner was a bit surprised by that. And this is where we get into, like, not totally clear what's going on, maybe a misunderstanding of some of the formalities of what needed to happen. Because a couple of days after this, Robin Lehner put out a small statement, short statement saying, quote, all I can say at this time is everyone knows why I couldn't be there. I am waiting calmly for things to be sorted out. His issues are he's been very outspoken about it and not being able to play for whatever he's going through mentally and otherwise, but it's a kind of a strange situation, and it's sort of unfortunate that it turned into something that not quite ugly, but did not need to be, you know, happen the way that it did.
It is what it is. That Kelly McCrimmon statement seems like a PR kind of saving grace. Like, okay, maybe we made a mistake. Let's backtrack. I talked to Robin. Everything's okay. Don't get mad at us. The Vegas Golden Knights seem to always do the wrong thing when it comes to dealing with players. You know, whether it's Marc-Andre Fleury, whether it's other, you know, Jonathan Marchessault, whether it's all their high-end guys or important players, and even their not important players, they just mess it up for some reason. And it just becomes a PR nightmare, and they end up screwing the players over massively. And so I can't think of any players that leave that city with a good taste in their mouth. Can you? Even I'm not going to put a word in anybody's mouth, but it seems to me players go there for the allure, you know, a good team. They do everything they can to win the Stanley Cup. The Vegas, you know, nightlife seems very exciting, and it's a good place to live off the strip, we've heard. And then the players leave and they go, man, it was fun to play there. Their fans are great, but the organization really does treat you like a piece of meat. So, and this is another instance of this happening where Robin Lehner is going through something. You know, he is having some mental issues that he's struggling with, and maybe going to camp would make that worse, would trigger something and set him off. And he obviously had an agreement in place where he wasn't going to camp. And then they released a statement saying, oh, we're going to maybe put him on waivers and this and that. He breach of contract. He didn't show up. It's like, what the hell are you doing, you guys? Like, it really is mind-boggling. In today's day and age where mental health is so apparent and everybody's so aware of it, for you guys to go and do this, it's really too bad. So they should be ashamed of themselves. They really should, because Robin Lehner does not deserve this. He's played great. He's obviously going through a lot of stuff. I don't know him. I've only met him a handful of times, but he's not a guy who just, in my eyes, will just not show up. Like, he does it for a reason, and because he can't handle being there, I'm guessing. So whatever. Hopefully he gets sorted out and they can move on, but give him his money. Let him get mentally healthy. And if at some point he thinks he can come back and play, then have him back in the rink. But until then, just stop all the drama. It's unnecessary drama, Tim.
Agreed. Another goalie situation here that's kind of interesting. Thatcher Demko with Vancouver met with the media at the end of last week. And the key message for him was that he has full confidence he'll be back to 100%. We talked about that recently, but there's no timeline. And this is where it kind of gets tricky. Said recovery from his unique injury, quote unquote, hasn't been linear. He hit a wall during the summer. He has made progress recently. But this is a bummer because he's obviously elite when he's on the ice, and he's very important to this team that has cup aspirations. They had Shelovs, who played last year. He played really well under the circumstances and being thrown into the gauntlet during the playoffs. But I don't know that he wants, I mean, Demko's their guy, and Shelovs looks like he had a little bit of an injury he was dealing with this summer. He looks to be ready to go. But they're going to have to figure this out. And this really sucks, because you root for players to be healthy and you want them to lose for a different reason, but not because of, you know, not being able to play, which sucks. And on top of that, the Canucks signed Kevin Lankinen this week for goalie insurance. So it sounds like they're going in with Shelovs and Lankinen with some kind of split. Lankinen's not that great. You know, he's not a starter. He's a low end backup really at this point. So he's nothing more than insurance. And this is very much uncertain. And this could be, he's ready in a few weeks, or he's not ready till December. He's not ready till April. There's no timetable, which just sucks.
Yeah, per Kevin Woodley, the injury is, Tim, to his popliteus. It's a triangle-shaped muscle behind the back of the knee that's attached to the femur and the tibia. So very rare. I've never heard of that. I didn't even know that ligament or muscle even existed. So I can't imagine a goaltender who is stretching and bending his knees and trying to dive across to injure that. That's got to be hard. And I've heard that it's not like curable. Like, you can't go and just do a surgery to fix it. So he kind of just has to deal with it. It'll be there forever. It's strange to hear Thatcher Demko say he'll be back to 100%, because early reports were he just has to deal with it. But yeah, he's huge for this team, Tim. If he's not 100%, we saw what they can do. They're a great team. And Shelovs was playing great last year, but you need that guy who's going to make that save, and that's your Demko. So big issue for the Vancouver Canucks, especially if they want to compete in that Western Conference. So tough to hear, man, because he really had his coming out party 2 years ago, played great, all-star game, and just to get an injury like this, so freak, it's really sad, especially for the Vancouver Canucks, who really get a new coach, get a new identity, players buying in, and it could all be taken away because of this small little triangle muscle on the back of your kneecap. Interesting. All right, moving on, Tim.
Yeah, the big news dropped this week. Mo Sider signed a 7-year contract with an AAV of 8.555, giving his age, I think. And, you know, he's young. We talked about his stats offensively coming down after 50 points his rookie year, but he was getting the most difficult matchups. He was getting the D-zone starts. He was getting teams sort of figuring him out a little bit. He wasn't the new kid on the block anymore, but he still has the ability to put up some decent points. He is one of the, I think, the only defenseman who had like 100 hits and 100 blocks last year, something like that. He doesn't fight, but he doesn't need to. He stays in the lineup, doesn't miss a game. And we factor in like where the contracts are headed. This is a huge win, I think, for both sides. The part that I, you know, want to get your reaction to, maybe it's nothing, but it was curious that it was 7 years and not eight. Does that mean anything? Or what? Yeah. What's the factor for that?
Well, I think the factor from what I read and from what I've heard is everybody in Detroit wants to be under Dylan Larkin's $8.7 million. So if there was going to be an eighth year, it would have been more than the $8.7 million. But just for an optics of a team, for whatever reason, they said they did the same with Lucas Raymond, where his contract comes under the 8.7. Mo Sider's is under the 8.7. And it's weird that I heard that or read that and they talked about it, because it would make sense that he would want to make more than Dylan Larkin. But I think that's the reasoning behind it. If there was an eighth year, they would want a higher term to make it $9 million or whatever the reason, or 8.75. So it works for Mo Sider in the end, because he will be 30 years old and a UFA and still be an incredible defenseman and set himself up for an even bigger raise. But yeah, good deal for the Detroit Red Wings. I think that's right where he should be. He's consistently averaging 42 points a season. He gets the hardest assignments, like you said. So the guy's a stud. He's 23 years old. You got to pay him. That's the way the game is played these days. And days before that, they signed Lucas Raymond to $8.075 million. He's 22 years old, coming off his ELC. So they invest $16 million to these two guys, and that's it. Here's Steve Yzerman. The plan is set. You got Larkin, Raymond, Sider, DeBrincat. That's it. Those are your four. And obviously, you got Kopp and Compher and Tarasenko and a couple other pieces. But those four guys, that's your core moving forward. Sider, Larkin, Raymond, DeBrincat. Is that good enough, Tim, in your eyes, to win a Stanley Cup for the Detroit Red Wings? To me, personally, no.
Probably not. Probably not, but I think Sider alone is good enough to be a number one defenseman. Yeah. When we talk about like so much of like the blueprint for the young modern defenseman are the Quinn Hughes, Cale Makars, the up-and-coming guys like Lane Hutson and Brock Faber and all these kids that just skate like the wind and put up points and don't need to be physical. But that just makes guys like Sider a unicorn, where he's got the height and the reach and the physicality and is able to keep up, even like a Brady Tkachuk. There's not many people like him that can put up the points and take on the responsibilities they do while also doing something that most young kids are not willing to do anymore. So it's a really, really special player, and just the home run for Yzerman. You know, just remember, this was a very risky pick at the time. He was a sixth overall.
Six, yeah.
Was way further down the board, wasn't scouted as much because he was coming out of Germany, and has just been an absolute slam dunk home run. So good for him, friend of the show. Hopefully we'll get him back on the show someday.
Yeah, just we will. But going back to the defense, this is another team that their defense is atrocious. When you look at this team, very top heavy, much like the Montreal Canadiens. They do have the most Sider, but after that, Sherratt, Edvinson, Petrie, Gustafson, Olimata, journeyman defensemen who've kind of been around the block, bounced around the league a little bit. And Steve Yzerman has paid all of them a decent amount of money to be in Detroit. Like Sherratt's getting almost five. Justin Hall's getting 3.4. Olimata's getting three. Petrie's still getting 2.4. So it's a really bad defense. And I mentioned it, I think, a couple weeks ago. Sider needs a swift puck-moving defenseman to be his partner. He needs someone to take the weight off of him a little bit. He plays with Ben Sherratt. It's just not fair to Mo Sider. I think you should have kept Shane Gostisbehere. He was a really good defenseman for you. I don't know why they let him walk. I'm not a GM. I don't have a Yzer plan, but to me, that was a mistake. You need to have someone to run the first power play unit.
How about Jake Walman, too? Traded him this summer.
Yeah. I don't understand the reasoning with Detroit. They're trying to go old school. Jim Harbaugh, we're going to run the ball. It's like, no, you need defensemen who can break the puck out. I get, you know, you're going to be tough to play against in front of the net. I understand that. You better be, because the puck's going to be in your zone the whole time. Because you aren't able to break it out and you aren't able to sustain ozone pressure when you don't have those guys. So we saw how it worked out last year. You came out hot and then you fizzled at the end of the season and you weren't able to make the playoffs. So they have great forwards, just nothing on the back end. All right, moving on, Tim, in this chaotic episode.
Rick Nash has been named the director of hockey operations for the Columbus Blue Jackets. I think much deserved. He's obviously very important to that city, that franchise. I would say that franchise. He's probably not a household name in the city to the average person, unfortunately. But yeah, really good for them. And obviously this is a team we'll keep an eye on just because it's going to be an emotional year for them. And he'll lead a lot of that, I think.
Best, probably the best pair of hands I've ever seen on Rick Nash for his size.
Yeah.
The guy was huge. Just so, so good, Tim. He was like a Matt Sundin, but just with better hands. Anyways, moving on. Dylan Gunther signs a deal with the Utah Hockey Club. 8 years, $7.14 million. Good deal, bad deal? Utah locking up their core, Tim. What do you like of this?
Well, I really like the player. I've talked about him. I'm going to talk about him more in the coming weeks. I think he's a great young player. I think what we talked about with Craig Morgan, how he was the one that stood out to him for how hard he works and his game and all that. The thing with him, though, he's only played 78 career games. He's played 2 years. I think the first ELC year was burned. 24 goals, 50 points in 78 career games. Good when you consider his age and the team that he was playing on. He's a very, very good player. But it is just, it is kind of funny. Can you imagine a guy who had never even played a full season getting an 8-year deal at this like, it's just crazy. But
it's a little premature, maybe.
I think he's the next one. I would say he's one of the next stars in this league, in my opinion, as a goal scorer. I don't know if he's a complete player yet. We'll find out, but I think he probably will be worth it. But it is funny how these things shake out where you earn the deal first and then you get the deal first and you earn it later. You know,
Tim, he got, I know it was only 45 games, but he only got 35 points last year. This guy signed it like, this is $56 million he just signed for 35 points. A little premature, maybe.
What's the alternative? I mean, like a bridge deal or something? Or
let him play out this season and negotiate in the offseason and see how this, like, get a little more sample size to see maybe he just had a hot spell for the end of the season. I don't know. To me, that's a little bit much for a guy who's only played 35 games or 45 games, excuse me. But good for Utah. They obviously see him. They drafted him. They see him in practice and how he is around the rink. So, hey, 7.14. In 5 years, that'll be a steal of a deal. Maybe. All right. What's the dirtbag Evander Kane up to?
Yeah, Evander Kane had surgery Friday in New York City. No exact timeline for recovery, but he's not expected to be available until 2025 sometime, January, February. So he's out of the lineup. His cap comes off at $5 million-ish, right? Five and a half. He doesn't really free anything up because he's going to be back and you expect him back in the lineup. So it's not like they can go fill that because what happens when he comes back, you know? So more of just will he be ready for the end of the season and the playoff push?
Yeah, reporting says that early feeling is that Evander Kane will be out 4 to 6 months. He had 2 sports hernias, 4 muscle tears. So we'll see if he even plays this season. Signs are, based on his work ethic, from what I've heard, he won't be back this year. You can quote me on that, put it on Twitter and send it to Don Sweeney. But yeah, this at the end of the day, this could potentially be good for the Edmonton Oilers. Oddly enough, it opens up some money for him, like you said, Tim. So they'll use that smartly. Stan Bowman, he just signed one big ticket, one more coming. He needs some money to play around with. But yeah, Evander Kane, if he would have been healthy last year for the Edmonton Oilers, they got a ring on their finger. That's how good this guy is. When he's on, he's very, very good and effective. So if he's healthy, it completely changes the balance of that series.
If they had an answer for a Tkachuk or a Lomberg or those guys to get in their face, it would be Evander.
Sam Bennett, one of those guys, Evander Kane would have stepped up and ended it, but he couldn't. He wasn't there, and they just he's a difference maker when he's in the lineup. He's very good. For as much off the ice, his antics and his moral compass, I don't want to judge because mine's probably not any better, but he's a good hockey player. Like, he's a damn good hockey player. All right, moving on.
Yeah, another couple of contracts came through. 6 years at $2.5 million AAV for Logan O'Connor in Colorado. He averaged 25 points over the last 3 years, but the first 2 years were about full season, and last year was only 57 games. So you're seeing a little bit of an increase. Very important there, player to them. I think it's strange. There was another one recently where there was a long term at a small, shorter AAV. My mind's blanking on who that was, but they like the player, obviously. They're willing to commit to him. So good for both teams.
It's very rare you see a third or fourth line guy get locked up for this long of term for not a lot of money.
Who was still, that? Yeah.
6 years at 2.5. That's a substantial contract for a player who is a third line guy who doesn't put a lot of points on the board. And he's 28 years old. So it's not like he's a spring chicken coming off his ELC. So interesting move by the Colorado Avalanche. We'll see how it plays out, but yeah, not a huge detriment if he doesn't pan out. Tony DeLangelo.
It was Nick Paul. He signed 5 years at 3.15. That's who I was thinking of.
I'm glad you got that off your conscience. And just that was going to ruin the rest of the show. Tony DeLangelo should have been friend of the show. I don't know why it didn't happen. Tim was worried about his politics and people, you know, not. Were you?
No, we've never talked about having him on the show.
Oh, I feel like we should have. Now he's in Russia because he signed a 1 year deal with SKA St. Petersburg to play in the KHL. Their season's already underway. I think they played 4 or 5 games so far. So he will join up with that team. Chris Tierney also left to go play in Russia. I don't know where he's playing, but these guys, they tried to tag on with an NHL team, maybe sign a PTO. None of that came to fruition. So now you'll see a mass exodus of guys going to Russia, cashing in, playing in the KHL, where the hockey is not nearly the same as the NHL, and make a boatload of money and also try to dodge missiles because they're in a war with Ukraine. Fun stuff. Fun stuff, Tim.
Yeah, it's surprising to me that he's so talented and he puts up points everywhere in any situation. And he's a right-handed shot, which a lot of teams need. And for whatever reason, off the ice, on the ice, he's just not worthy of a contract, or maybe he just didn't like the offers he was getting. And so
it does go to show you that off ice has a huge impact. When you're not a superstar, when you're not like one of the top end guys, you have to kind of toe the line and be, you know, friendly, play friendly in the sandbox. You can't just be this prick and expect GMs to sign you. And he's burned bridges wherever he's gone. And he's very outspoken with his beliefs, and right or wrong, you can't do that. So he's seeing the cause and effect of how he's been acting. So he can have fun in Russia. You know, I bet you he'll miss the USA when he's over there. But, you know, he's a good player. Like you said, he puts up points. I think everywhere he's gone, is his career high in points is 51, Tim. 53 he had with the Rangers. Like, the guy's solid. But he rubs people the wrong way.
53 running power play too, by the way, because of Adam Fox. Like, it's crazy. The next one here, probably the last thing we'll get to today. Cole Perfetti signed a bridge deal with the Winnipeg Jets. He was the last remaining RFA besides Swayman and another guy that's not important. 2 years at $3.25 million AAV. I think it's a great deal for the Jets and the player. He still is one of those guys that has a lot to prove. I'm glad they didn't give him 7x8 or whatever. Good cap hit. Perfetti can get back into the lineup, outperform that AAV and just give that a chance to prove himself. And I think it's a smart one. This is probably similar to what Gunther could have done. But this is really good for the Jets.
Yeah, good deal. I got one more thing, Tim. Igor Shesterkin. So he's going to be UFA next year. They've been negotiations between him and the New York Rangers ongoing for forever. They want to re-sign him, but it just hasn't happened. He released a statement saying if things don't happen in the next 2 weeks, he doesn't want to negotiate during the season. He wants to be focused and keep distractions to a minimum during the season. Where does that leave him? Because he's watching the Jeremy Swayman situation.
Yep.
He wants Swayman to set the market so he can go and top it. And so if he's asking $12 million per, which sources have confirmed that he wants $12 million. Well, what do the New York Rangers do in this situation? I know you don't have anything in front of you on this and that, but
yeah,
that news just got released that this guy could potentially be a UFA next year at 28 years old, coming off an incredible season. He's been rock solid for the New York Rangers. The Rangers don't have enough money to sign him. They still are in salary hell with the players that they have, with the Trocheks, Kreider, Zibanejad, Panarin, Fox, Trouba. So they can't afford $15 million or $12 million for Igor Shesterkin. What happens then, Tim? And then just a quick answer, but what do you think of this situation?
Yeah, this is tough, because when guys say that, and it's totally fair, right? Like, hey, I don't want to talk about negotiations during the I think Seth Jarvis did something similar. Like, I want to just focus on playing hockey. Let's talk next summer, which is totally fair to do. But it puts an immense amount of pressure on the situation, because it really tightens the window for the negotiations to actually happen. Now, it's assumed that the player and the team, both with the best of intentions, want to make a deal, get it done in June, July next year, whatever that's going to be. That's still not a lot of time. And you have to think of like, when does the Swayman deal get done? How does that impact things? If he wants $11, $12 million, do they have, first, are they willing to pay it? Two, do they have the cap space for it? Like, you know, and then how, what other deals come between now and then that might impact that number? So like if Swayman signs for eight, if he relents and signs for eight or eight and a half, can Shesterkin really ask for 12? Is he that much better than Swayman? He's definitely deserves more, but he's not $3.5-4 million more, right? So, like, I think that the Swayman thing will impact it. And the last thing I'll say is there's this quote from Trouba, who spoke to the media before camp the other day. I'm looking for it, but the gist of it was that this is the last year for this core, realistically. He said, basically, here it is. Quote from Wyshynski, tweeted it on the 19th. In all likelihood, this will probably be the last crack for this core. I don't think that's a secret by any means.
Wow.
That's coming from your captain. I don't think I would love this if I'm Drury or any of those guys in charge. But it's an honest statement. And I think this Shesterkin thing will certainly be impacted by what this team does and who's coming back next year.
Yeah, because the interesting fact is all these guys are under contract next year, aside from Igor Shesterkin. So the core being Panarin, Zibanejad, Kreider, Trocheck, Fox, and Trouba. They have one more year left, some of them on their deal, Trouba and Panarin. So interesting comments coming from the captain of the New York Rangers. Keep an eye on that. Lots of moving parts happening in NHL. Jeremy Swayman, New York Rangers, exciting stuff. This was chaotic, Tim. I need a break. So we appreciate everybody listening. Tim, anything else before we sign off?
No, we'll be back on Thursday with the Pacific Division preview. Very exciting. And then we'll get into next week with some maybe some bold predictions as we get ready for the season.
I like that. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll talk to you on Thursday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.